This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
In a very couple of minutes here, we'll be hearing from our special guest, David Halpern, who's got a new book out by the title of Intimate Alien, The Hidden Story of the UFO. Before we go to that, we'll talk about a little bit about last week and about what everybody's doing to keep safe from coronavirus. So last week we had Preston Dennett, both for the main show and for after the Paracast. And I know I always agree with Preston. I think he accepts things too readily. But isn't he, Randall, a great storyteller?
Yeah, I really like Preston Dennett. I think he's got such a great attitude. And, like you, I tend to think that maybe he's a bit weighed down on the believer side when it comes to some stories, like the Travis Walton case, the Sid Graves National Forest incident. He's very convinced that that seemed to be a real case. Me, not so much, but when he mentioned that when Travis punched the alien in the head, it was like punching a marshmallow, and that he had run across another case where somebody had actually attacked an alien and it felt like they were punching a beanbag, I thought, well, those are really coincidental experiences. You know, very kind of interesting. I'd never really looked at those details before.
Those are the things that make these all so weird. And it leads me to believe that there's certainly a subjective element there and that it's not a real physical experience, but something else.
Quite possibly. I mean, with the Sid Graves National Forest incident, I'm not sure there was any abduction at all. You know, maybe there was, you know, maybe it's possible for someone who doesn't have a stellar reputation at the time to have something strange happen to them. But I have a tough time believing that case. But other cases that Preston has looked into, well, you know, he seems to be fairly level-headed and a really sincere guy. Like, I don't get the impression that Preston is trying to pull anyone in or fool them or, you know, create a cult of personality around himself. He's just a really kind of very matter-of-fact, likable guy.
David, have you heard or read stuff from Preston Dennett?
No, I'm afraid I've not.
The point is here, of course, is that the guy is trying his best to report about really, really weird things. I don't disagree something happens to these people, but he's too quick to call them ET.
Well, that's pretty common out there, in the world of ufology. And I think maybe just before we get to that, one of the things that I would really like to say to all our listeners out there is, in the midst of this whole COVID-19 thing, well, Gene and I are doing well. Our former co-host, Christopher O'Brien, he's doing well. William Puckett, our part-time special correspondent, he's doing well. And you can always check out his latest reports at UFOs Northwest. And we really hope all our listeners out there are doing well and following all the WHO guidelines to minimize the chance of contracting COVID-19. Our guest today, David Halpern, he's also doing well. We're really glad to have you on the show today, David. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me here.
What I'd like to do is talk a little bit about your book. It's called The Intimate Alien, The Hidden Story of the UFO. And in it, you talk about a third way of looking at the UFO problem. So let's talk a bit about that third way. What do you mean by that?
Okay, the standard approaches are the believers and the debunker. And I don't believe and I don't debunk. I do not think we are being visited by extraterrestrials or by entities from other dimensions or the center of the earth or wherever. But on the other hand, I am quite convinced that we are not dealing with bunk. We are dealing with something that emerges from the human psyche And that is tremendously important, at times profound, and to which attention must be paid. And the way I speak of that third path is to say UFOs are a myth. But by that, I do not mean they are falsehood or nonsense. I use myth in the way that Carl Jung used it, as a kind of collective dream of the human species.
Maybe we can elaborate on that a little bit, because not everyone is familiar with Jung. Most of us think of myths as, you know, just stories that are obscured by the mists of time. Maybe they're true, maybe they're fiction, maybe there's some combination of both. But what you're saying sounds a little bit more mystical, so along the lines of what he might have called the collective consciousness. Are we saying in this context that maybe UFOs are some type of an archetype?
Yes. Yes. I mean, Jung saw them as mandalas, widespread archetype that represents wholeness, represents integration of opposites. And if you think about it, aerodynamically, flying discs don't make a heck of a lot of sense. But an image of wholeness projected into the sky does.
Right. There's the whole yin-yang. That's the kind of the wholeness. It's a circle.
Exactly.
In essence, there's the circle itself is very much an embodiment of that whole idea. Of course, not all UFOs are circles, though. I mean, now we've got triangles. So, we could get into the mythology of triangles just as easily, I suppose.
Oh, yes. So, I mean, and actually, the triangle is a really interesting phenomenon. Back when Gene and I were teen ufologists in the 1960s, I don't think there were any such things as flying triangles. We had the disc-shaped UFOs and the cigar-shaped, which we tended to assume were larger, and the motherships for the disc-shaped UFOs. The triangle was a relatively recent newcomer to the stage. I think of it in connection with the Hudson Valley sightings of the 1980s, and it really comes into its own in Belgium in 1989 to 1990. And there, I think, Jung had a handle on what is symbolized by the triangle. And if you'd like, we can talk about that a little bit more.
Be my guest.
Well, I'm following in the path here of Eric Wellett, who wrote a book on the psychological and parapsychological dimensions of the UFO problem. And he pointed out a symbolism, you know, that a fair number of the Belgian reports were of flying triangles with white lights at the three corners and a dimmer red light in the middle. Now, to me, that sounds, Eric did not point this out, but to me, that sounds very much like the Jungian archetype of the quaternity, which is also an image of wholeness, and that it's characterized by a foursome of which one is somehow different from the other three. Now, what Eric pointed out is that there was a very specific kind of historical symbolism going on, that you recall the Belgian wave started at the end of November 1989, and that November 1989 was not exactly an uneventful time in European history, that on November 9th, the Berlin Wall came down, and what unfolded over the coming weeks and months was something that nobody really would have expected, the collapse of communism in Central and Eastern Europe, for the most part without bloodshed.
You know, now, what? Before the advertisers give us some bloodshed,
We got more with David, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from AmeriCare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. AmeriCare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, AmeriCare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
Honorary Forest Ranger Betty White here, lending a hand to my dear friend Smokey Bear, because for 75 years, he's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But there's a lot more to say. Like, if you park your car on tall, dry grass, the hot exhaust pipe can start a wildfire. So be careful out there. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So let's go back to that history there. David Halpern, author of Intimate Alien, go on.
Yes, and this is the punchline. That the red star was a symbol of communism, the white star was a symbol of NATO, and what people were seeing in the skies was a symbolic representation along Jungian lines, that is, the three and the one, of what they felt happening around them, that the once menacing red star was fading, and that the star of the Western Alliance was growing stronger.
I don't know if that's actually the case, like that somebody didn't actually sort of see a craft that had those lights. But I find it really fascinating that the symbolism like this tends to be a facet of the overall phenomenon. And it has been for, it seems, as far back as you want to go. I mean, there are even stories of flying crosses. You don't need any real in-depth explanation for that one either, I mean, do you, David?
Not at all. I see what was going on in Belgium as something very archaic, actually medieval, that people were aware of changes, of transformations around them, of an impending war. They look up to the sky and they see battles, objects battling each other, or in one case, armies marching in the heavens. I would call these religious visions, and I would call UFO sightings religious visions, religious experiences.
Yeah, indeed, some of them have been, and there have been books to that effect written. You know, God Drives a Flying Saucer, for example, an excellent title. R.L. Dionne, I think, and he goes through a number of stories right out of the Old and New Testament. It's been around for a long time. These symbolisms, they can't really be ignored. I mean, maybe we can make a symbolism out of everything. But to me, it seems like just maybe a little too coincidental that we can do it with so much precision so often.
One of the points I make in the book is that the question to be asked about UFOs is not what are they or where do they come from, but what do they mean? That a spaceship, an interplanetary spaceship, if it exists, doesn't mean anything. It just is. But the UFO, as I see it, and the Belgian cases, it seems to me, are examples, are vehicles of meaning.
Exactly. Let's suppose they are real, and just sort of set that aside. What are they doing here, and what is this meaning that they're trying to convey? I mean, we hear of people like contactees or abductees, say that they have been given messages by these aliens, for lack of a better term, that they tend to talk about preserving the ecology, avoiding mass destruction. Preston Dennett, actually, our last guest, he mentioned that another thing that is less often conveyed is to stop treating animals as bad as we do. So something separate from just nature itself, like treat the planet better, but stop with the eating of the animals. And now we find that this coronavirus thing has its origin in the wet markets of China, where their government there has given people permission to hunt all manner of animals and sell them as food products.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think that the messages that people who supposedly have contacts with the UFO pilots, that these messages are part of the story. It's not simply a matter of explicit messages, but what is conveyed by the simple physical appearance of the UFO.
Oh, sure. Getting back to the triangle again, I mean, there we go with the Trinity. I suppose we could look at the red dot in the middle as the battle of the Trinity against Satan or something like that as well. The evil invading the Trinity and trying to disrupt it from within.
Actually, Jung dealt with something like that, but did the reverse. To Jung, Christianity's great error was that it took a quaternity and mutilated it and left only the Trinity. That the fourth, Jung said that where we have three, we must ask where is the fourth. And for Jung, the fourth in Christianity was sometimes he thought it was Satan, sometimes he thought it was Mary, and that it was Christianity's mistake to have excluded, let's say, the fierce and the destructive, or alternatively the feminine, from its God and turned it in to something external and demonic. So yeah, I think that we're dealing with a variety of the same symbolism that led Christianity to see the Trinity as something natural.
There is an element out there who sees UFOs as, in quotation marks, transports from hell. And so they see it very much as this outsider force that's coming in to disrupt the Christian way.
Now, I have to make an admission here. I have not looked at their literature, and I think it's important.
You can find it scattered around the internet, where the whole alien presence on Earth is seen as a demonic presence. On the other side, we have angels, we have the so-called light side, and then we have this darker side. For them, anything that has to do with aliens is evil, and anything that has to do with angels is good. And yet to us, I mean, aren't they both kind of alien?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
So when we're talking this way, then, you're not saying that there's no room for people who want to look at it more objectively and say, well, yeah, I mean, there are craft coming here, probably from some other star system. They're probably interstellar. That's fine. But in the larger picture, we can just look at it this way. We can set that aside and we can look at it this way. So you're, if I'm reading you right, you're not saying we need to replace the idea that they are a physical reality. You're saying, well, here is something else we can look at that can maybe expand our understanding of it further in some way. Have I got you right there?
No. I consider that a legitimate position, but it's not mine.
Okay, so what is yours then? Are you saying if you had your way, would we just take all of the books that are on our UFO library shelves right now and burn them in a great pyre and just start over?
God forbid. I would not favor burning books and certainly not UFO books. Whatever is said about the UFO is a part of the phenomenon and has aspects to reveal about it, that's important. But I do not believe that there is an objective component, you know, except in the very banal sense that if I misinterpret the planet Venus as a UFO, that the planet Venus has physical existence. It is quite legitimate for someone to say that, yes, the actual visitations of beings from other planets has stimulated what I see as the religious mythology of the UFO.
With Gene, David, and Randall, you're in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump says production of face masks is on the rise to deal with the coronavirus pandemic, but they need to stay in the U.S.
We need the masks. We don't want other people getting it. That's why we're instituting a lot of Defense Production Act.
The Trump administration announced it would prevent the export of N95 masks. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says That's not a good idea.
We're working with the American administration to ensure that they understand that goods and services that are essential to both our countries flow in both directions across the border, and it is not in any of our interests to actually limit that flow.
John Hopkins University reports the U.S. death toll from the pandemic has topped 8,000. This is USA Radio News.
America's founders knew power corrupts, and ultimate power corrupts ultimately, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's why they built in checks and balances to prevent any one group from seizing all power.
And that's why our president is elected by a college of electors, to protect the rights of little states like Delaware and Wyoming against giants like New York and California. After all, our country is a republic, the United States of America, not the United State. Our states are independent sovereign powers, who created the federal government, not the other way around.
And that's why all power ultimately lies in we the people and the states, not a central dictatorship of cronies. Did you know that? Thank God for the U.S. Constitution.
Find out more how our amazing Constitution and Bill of Rights protect us, the citizens, against power-craved politicians in Washington. Help us take back America. Go to OurAmericanRights.com. Brought to you by the American Media Council.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Just listen to what Wayne has to say.
Extendovite. I have been taking it for about 2 years, and I had really bad heart palpitations. And since I've been taking it, I don't have any major episodes at all anymore. I'm 76 years old, and I still play competitive basketball. Well, of course, I've taken care of myself really good since I was 60, but Extendivite really helped the blood pressure, really helped the... I used to get really bad episodes of heart palpitations, just skipping beats and double beats. But also I wanted to tell you that I really appreciate your broadcast. That's just really refreshing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is me, the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
As usual, David, you start on a trend. I don't want to stop you, but the clock on the wall says otherwise. Go ahead, please.
Okay, well, that I see, I assume no one has misunderstood me so far, but I see UFOs as essentially a religious phenomenon. And as such, I see them coming from inside us.
Okay, so what I'm trying to get from you then is you don't believe then in things like radar visual reports. Like, even Young himself says, you know, at the end of Flying Saucers, a Modern Myth of Things We See in the Sky, is that, I mean, obviously your mind isn't going to create a radar return. So, you know, or is it? I mean, how do we deal with that then?
I would have to say there that I think when we speak of radar visual sightings, we often ignore the cases in which radar does not confirm the visual. And again, I would go to Belgium, this time to March 1990, where jets are sent up to pursue objects that have been detected on radar and apparently seen. The pilots get a lock on them with the radar, but they don't see anything. So how would we explain that if we suppose there are actual objects there? So I am going to have to say that I think that the radar visual cases are caused by selective recording of those cases where coincidentally there are false radar blips where people have seen something, and ignoring those cases where there are divergences.
Okay, so in the Belgian sightings, there were instances where pilots did see lights. If we go to the 1952 DC cases, what we've got is we've got two sets of radar, more than one jet, and ground witnesses. And we have a case where a pilot is vectored by ground radar to a UFO that is being observed from the ground. The pilot sees it, locks on to that object with its radar. So now we've got the ground radar, the jet's radar, people on the ground, and the jet pilot saying, okay, I see them. They surround his jet, and this is all well documented. And then they streak off into the distance and are gone from radar. Now, I don't really see how we can claim that that is just in any way a religion or a religious vision on the part of people and technology. So this is why I'm saying I really find what your book and your viewpoint says to be interesting, because it's something that isn't really looked at. It brings meaning into these sightings, but I'm personally not prepared to say, well, something like the Washington DC 52 case just is irrelevant because it was someone's imagination or faulty equipment or something like that. That doesn't work.
Yeah, I admit there are cases that are genuinely baffling, and that is one of them.
Okay, so now we're back to where, okay, let's say, okay, so there is, at least in some people's minds, and I mean, I wasn't there. Maybe the whole thing is just fiction, but I think it's reasonable enough to believe that that happened. So we can set that aside over there, and then we can say, well, what the heck does it all mean? What are these objects, whether they're real or not, trying to convey? And that's where we get into what you do, and by focusing on that so exclusively, I think you come up with some really interesting ideas.
Thank you. Thank you. And I will acknowledge that there are things I leave out. You quoted one of them. The one that I bring up in my book is the Socorro sighting of April 1964, which never seen a convincing explanation of.
Yeah, no, that's another good one. Very interesting. So when you bring it up in your book, let's talk about that briefly.
I bring it up to admit that I can't explain everything.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough, because, you know, it's certainly we've got a whole variety of players in the game, right? We're not talking about just believers or debunkers. We've got the believers, the debunkers, the skeptics, the scientists, the psychologists, the mythologists, the historians, and the ufologists. And everybody has got their own particular slant on it. And, you know, I personally think there's room for everybody.
I've made a concession. But now I'm going to take back that concession partly.
Okay.
Because it seems to me that if you want to do the obvious alternative to saying that, well, we don't know what happened at Socorro, but we're going to assume that there was some mundane explanation. If you do the alternative to say that these were space visitors, why is it that the beings that the witness, Lonnie Zamora, saw in connection with the UFO seem to fade away? Why are they replaced after the publication of Whitley Strieber's Communion by the classic grays, the beings with the light bulb-shaped heads and the enormous eyes? Why are those never reported before Strieber? Why do the pilots of these objects change with the decades? That would not suit actual visitors. It would suit things that are projections of our inner needs and desires. It's sort of like why does the airship of 1897 seem to reflect the technology of the late 19th century?
Those are really, really good questions. And I'm not sure that I have the answer, but I would suggest that it's equally as possible that those projections are not necessarily projections from us, but projections from them in order to drive our own psyches. Do you see what I'm saying there?
That is to say that we are being, not only do we see the UFOs, but we are being psychically influenced by entities that are not human, that are outside ourselves.
Exactly. Maybe not psychically, but they're affecting our psyche, our history in this really interesting way that you describe. And it seems to be leading us in a direction. It causes us to think, like Gene always reminds us, Gene, what is this saying? And who was responsible for that? UFOs are here to make us think?
That was Ray Palmer, something he repeated over and over again. I think partly to get people to think about some of the things he was saying, which weren't necessarily kosher in connection with conventional UFO thinking, if there is such a thing as conventional.
Yes. Yes. But go flip that around a bit, okay? Because we can say that the UFOs, that we create the UFOs to stimulate ourselves into thinking in directions we wouldn't have thought otherwise.
We certainly look at them that way. That gets into the whole kind of the co-creation thing again there, where our good friend over at Radio Mysterioso, Greg Bishop, talks about.
Does spell it out a little bit.
Well, it's pretty much the same as what you're saying, is in that the phenomena tends to reflect the worldview of the experiencer.
Yeah.
We'll get into UFO creation, conspiracies, collective unconscious, co-creation, and lots of good things. I want to talk also about that book, Intimate Alien, after the next segment. More to come with David Halperin, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Join me, George Norrie, in Indian Wells, California, May 29th to June 1st for the Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, an epic weekend of exploration into UFOs, ancient civilizations, crop circles, and so much more. Over 150 lectures, panels, workshops, and events with leading experts, Paul Hellyer, Linda Moulton Howe, Nick Pope, Emery Smith, Stephen Greer, Russell Targ, Doc Wallach, Leslie Kane, and more. Get your tickets at contactinthedesert.com. It's time to make contact, contactinthedesert.com.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home? And you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. 800-667-9035. That's 800-667-9035.
The Hippo Tea Club's original pure powdery Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on, so it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hippo Tea Club's original pure powdery Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hippo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So, we have an issue we're talking about here, Greg Bishop's co-creation theory, which is an extension of the collective unconscious, saying that together we're all involved in what we see, and we're manipulating it in some way.
I would formulate it somewhat differently, but I think it's along the same lines, that the witness is a vital part of the sighting. The witness is not just somebody who happened to be there when an extraterrestrial vehicle was flying around.
That implies, if there is an objective reality, that there is an intent on their part to influence the experiencer.
No, what has struck me over the past 10 minutes or so is that everything we're saying about UFOs could also be said about God.
Yes, that is true.
That is the essential question, say, when you're dealing with the Bible, which is something I deal with a great deal, that are we dealing with a human projection onto a non-existent being, or are we dealing with some way that something beyond us uses our human psyches to convey what he, she, it wants to convey to us? I don't know which stand I would take on that question.
I think there's room for both, actually, in there.
Sort of that the biblical revelation is co-created by God and by the recipients. Or I should say, I won't use the word God, but something transcendent and the recipients.
Well, I guess if we're going to compare it to God or Godhood, then we have to have some idea of what we mean by that. And me personally, being non-religious, I look at gods and Godhood as being sort of like the figureheads of a religious hierarchy or belief system. I mean, in other words, there's the idea in monotheism that there's only one God, but then we have pantheism and so on where there are many. We can make anything we want into a God. All we have to do is name it as such and create a number of rituals around it. And, your crystal ball can become a God. So in a sense, I mean, we look at the Egyptians, the sun was a God to them. Literally, the sun that we see in the sky, they worshiped as a God. It's a real thing. It's measurable. It exists. It's there every day. It's repeatable. And yet it had this special meaning in their life that was religious.
This is fascinating because it sounds like your approach to religion is akin to mine to UFOs.
Oh, that is really interesting. Yes. Okay, well, yeah, in which case I see that there's room for both, because I see the sun as being a large plasma ball in the sky that is performing all its physical processes in order to provide light and warmth to the earth. And yet I also recognize that the Egyptians and even some people today view it as a deity.
Let's take the miracle of the sun at Fatima in October of 1917, in which we don't know just how many were in the crowd, but some estimates give it as 70,000. 70,000 people watched the sun fall to the earth, which you and I know that the sun cannot possibly do. And yet this huge crowd of people saw it do that. And this, to me, it's not usually connected with UFOs, although I think probably it should be. But I think this is a branch of the UFO mystery. What we see, what people see when they see a UFO.
Undoubtedly. And that's what makes it so fascinating. Jacques Vallée, he was one of the people in ufology, prominent ufologist, who talked about a sort of a control system or agenda to influence earthly culture via these esoteric experiences. He would get right into the mythology in a very similar way to you and suggest that what is going on is a type of influence of culture through the selective experiences that they create for the experiencer.
Yeah, Vallée, I'm glad you mentioned Vallée, because if I had to name the two people who most influenced my approach to UFOs, the first would be Jung and the second would be Vallée. And in fact, by coincidence, I met Vallée in 1970 when I was working for a professor at Stanford, and he was there. I mean, it was just wonderful. I mean, he opened my mind to aspects of ufology that in my teen years I could not have imagined. And my encounter with him induced me to reread Jung's book on flying saucers. And these are the two influences that have most shaped my thinking. But I must say that I think Jung was closer to the truth than Vallée in ways that we've already brought forth.
And I think we need that point of view. Recently, we had a friendly skeptic on, Sarah Scholes, who was talking about ufology culture from the point of view of a person who is very interested in science and probably would be completely on the other side from where we are. And yet she was very open-minded to everything in the middle as well. We really need people like her who are completely outside the ketchup bottle to say, hey, you know, everybody in there, have you considered this point of view? And in a way, I think that where you're coming from is almost as outside the ketchup bottle as that, but from a different perspective.
And with an important difference that, unless I misunderstand, I don't think Sarah Scholes was ever in the ketchup bottle. Am I right about that?
That's right. No, you bring up a really good point there, because in your early years, you were a teenage UFO investigator.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about that transformation. I mean, I know some of our listeners have heard it before, but go ahead and recount how you evolved.
The beginning was not evolution, but a sudden, dazzling opening of awareness. And it came when I read Gray Barker's They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, which was published in 1956. It is an extraordinary book. I wish more people would read it. I read that book in the course of doing an extra credit paper for an eighth grade science class, and I became converted, that I became absolutely convinced that UFOs were real. And I look back and I ask, why? What was there about this perhaps somewhat overheated book, this certainly fantastic book, that persuaded me so much? And the answer was the men in black, the three men in black who come to silence you if you discover the awful truth about UFOs. And I knew that they existed. I knew that Barker was telling the truth, and I knew that because they were part of my daily experience. The silence that prevailed in my small household over the dreadful secret that my mother was slowly dying. Reading Barker, I saw a mirror of my own experience. At that time, I didn't know it was a mirror of my own experience. It's only looking back that I can grasp that. And for that reason, I knew UFOs were real because the men in black were real, and I knew the men in black were real because I saw them every day. Am I making sense here?
I think you're making sense. For those who haven't heard your recounting of this before, it will make more sense as you continue.
So I became a ufologist, I think partly unconsciously, as an attempt to understand what was happening to my mother, why she was withering and weakening.
Were you religious at this time? Maybe that's something that we should get clear. Are you a religious person? Were you a religious person at that time?
I'll start with the first question. I consider myself a religious person, even though I am very uncertain, to say the least, whether God exists. I certainly do not believe that the God described in the Bible exists. But I am religious in the sense that I feel deeply the need for the transcendent and the need for humans, at least for myself, to interact with the transcendent, to have some sense of it in our lives. Now, it does not necessarily follow that the transcendent exists. But
you know what's going to exist? Not us if we don't get these announcements out of the way. More to come with Gene Randall and David. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.